Hey there. The podcast you're about to listen to is generated by AI. It summarizes some of the research that the USAID 2040 project has already produced. This particular research is focused on the contextual factors that set the conditions for democracy, how those factors might be changing, how they're interrelated, and how they could affect future democracy.
Democracy. Democracy is complex, sometimes even messy. It's not easy. Max Priebe, Renata Manziva, Masafumi Nishi, and Aaron Rosa analyze numerous factors and phenomena influencing democracy. Their findings highlight how a wide array of social, economic, political, technological, legal, and ethical dimensions interact to shape the conditions under which democracy operates. So today, we're diving deep into some of these interconnected aspects. We've got a really interesting collection of analyses here, and our goal isn't really to pick sides. It's more about trying to get a clearer picture of all the different forces at play in our democracies. Okay, so let's unpack this.
Yeah, and what's really striking, I think, is just how far-reaching it all is. You know, we often think democracy is just about voting, maybe government structures, but this research, it really shows how democracy is woven into the fabric of our everyday lives, things like the age of the population, even the digital tools we're using.
Absolutely. And speaking of age, it's hard to ignore the demands on health and care systems as well as populations get older. It puts pressure on public budgets, doesn't it?
It really does, precisely. And if we connect this back to democracy itself, when older citizens are actually involved in shaping health policy, maybe even research, it can genuinely strengthen things. You know, it builds more trust, makes the system feel more relevant to them.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, if people feel their own experiences are valued, especially with something so personal like healthcare, yeah, it's got to build confidence in the whole democratic thing.
Right.
But the analysis also points out some real hurdles for older adults, things like navigating the digital world, understanding complex health info, even just, you know, physical limitations. It can all lead to them feeling a bit pushed aside, marginalized.
Yeah. And that digital divide you mentioned, it's not just about not having a smartphone, is it? It fundamentally limits how older citizens can engage online, accessing information, taking part in digital politics. It almost creates this like second class of digitally excluded citizen.
That really brings up fairness, doesn't it?
It does. And we also need to think about gender dynamics here. The research points out these persistent issues, like the pension gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also how women still do most of the unpaid caregiving. This doesn't just hurt their economic security. It impacts their ability to really engage democratically, too.
Mm-hmm. If a big chunk of the population is struggling economically because of these things, their ability to participate, well, it's definitely affected.
And that can become a sort of cycle, can't it? Because if the care systems feel unfair or people feel unsupported, that can just breed wider dissatisfaction with politics generally. It kind of weakens those social bonds that democracy really needs.
Exactly. Okay, shifting gears a bit, let's talk about another key social piece, gender justice and digital rights.
Right. The analysis brings up the challenges for young women, girls, and non-binary youth, things like discrimination, exclusion, and that really serious problem of online gender-based violence.
Yeah, it's pretty troubling when you think about the barriers these groups face just trying to be in online spaces. And those spaces are becoming so central, aren't they, for civic life, for information. And the point about gender balance being vital for a healthy democracy, it seems obvious, but I guess it needs constant work.
Well, what's really insightful here, I think, is the idea that if we're not intentionally thinking about gender when we build new systems or update old ones, we just end up baking in the old inequalities. You know, a sort of neutral approach just isn't enough. We need to be actively gender aware.
And real representation means having those diverse voices, especially young women, non-binary youth, actually involved, right?
Right.
The analysis suggests this leads to better policies, more reflective ones.
Makes sense. Different experiences bring different perspectives on what actually needs fixing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in this digital age, we just can't ignore online gender-based violence. Mm. If people don't feel safe participating online, it shuts down open dialogue. It silences voices, voices you need to hear. It's also interesting, though, how the analysis notes the different ways young people are getting involved politically. Social media stuff, protest art, even those informal support networks, mutual aid.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that political engagement isn't just voting, right? It's always changing.
Okay, let's move to something really fundamental. Water. Water governance and security.
Yes. Water. I mean, it's essential for life, obviously. But the analysis frames managing it sustainably and fairly as just central to how societies are governed. We're talking ecology, basic human needs, infrastructure, even international relations, geopolitics.
Right. It's easy to take clean water for granted sometimes, but looking at it like this, you see how deeply connected it is to, well, everything. The analysis mentions things like water diplomacy, stakeholder platforms, ways to get transparency.
Exactly. And that transparency is crucial for democratic accountability in water management. But on the flip side, weak laws around water, they can really undermine that accountability, open the door for unfairness.
Okay. What about this idea of blue infrastructure, like water recycling, desalination?
Yeah, those are presented as key tools for adapting to climate change, water scarcity. But, and it's an important but, they often demand a lot of energy.
The energy trade-off.
Exactly. So while they help with water shortages, we have to weigh that against energy use, carbon emissions. It's complex. And the analysis also mentions how environmental damage, like deforestation, makes water systems much more vulnerable to erosion, drought, pollution.
And there's a specific example in the analysis, right, from Spain. The Júcar-Vinalopó project.
Yes, that's highlighted as a really interesting case. It involved inclusive, science-based decision-making, lots of stakeholders working together. They basically redefined how they planned the infrastructure to protect the ecosystem and share the water more fairly. It's a great example of, well, democratic principles applied to resource management.
That sounds like a positive model.
It does. And then thinking bigger, like within the EU, water diplomacy tries to align resource management with democratic values, sustainability, peace building. But, you know, that really hinges on having shared legal frameworks and, crucially, the political will to actually follow through.
Sure. The will has to be there. Okay. Let's zoom into our cities now. Urban infrastructures and planning.
Right. The analysis makes it clear. How we design our cities impacts sustainability, social equity, public health. Especially with fast urbanization and heat waves becoming more common.
Yeah, that link between poor planning and the urban heat island effect. All that concrete, not enough green space, it traps heat. And that has real health consequences.
Definitely.
So this is where smart city planning comes in. The analysis mentions democratic benefits like climate-sensitive design, green spaces, tools for public participation.
Exactly. Making sure urban development isn't just top-down, but actually involves the people living there.
And technology can help. ICTs, digital monitoring for transparency.
It certainly can play a role, making things more transparent, more responsive. But, and the analysis stresses this, these tools only work if people know about them and can actually use the information.
Right. Access and awareness.
Mm-hmm. And we also need to be super careful that when we plan green infrastructure or roll out smart city stuff, we're actively including marginalized groups. Otherwise, we risk creating solutions that just don't help the most vulnerable people, maybe even make things worse for them.
That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
Okay, stepping back to a wider view, wealth inequality and social inequity.
Yeah, the analysis really frames this as critical how economic and political power is spread out or not spread out in society.
And it connects economic grievances, maybe made worse by globalization, to the rise of populist support.
It does. The suggestion is that people feeling left behind economically might see populist movements as, you know, fighting for them, offering protection.
And it's interesting how these movements often frame economic problems as cultural fights, almost shifting the blame.
Yeah, redirecting that frustration away from maybe systemic economic issues towards, I don't know, immigrants or elites.
Right. And the analysis suggests that major economic turmoil can weaken social cohesion, make people more likely to back movements that reject the whole democratic establishment.
Exactly. That feeling of disconnection can be powerful. And it can also deepen those divides, you know, between cities and rural areas, making it harder to solve problems together.
So the takeaway seems to be that ignoring economic inequality can really fuel populism and erode trust in democracy itself.
Pretty much. But there's also a flip side, as I mentioned, the idea that actively working towards more equality can actually boost democracy's legitimacy.
That makes intuitive sense, doesn't it? If the system feels fairer, people are more likely to trust it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's pivot to the future of work. Big topic. The analysis points to major shifts happening because of, well, social, economic, and technological changes. AI, automation, remote work.
Huge implications. And the analysis points out that automation could displace a lot of jobs, especially routine ones, which could, unfortunately make inequality worse.
Right. And at the same time, there's this growing demand for high-skilled workers. Mm. So you worry about a widening skills gap, people getting left behind if they can't adapt.
And what about worker rights? The analysis seems concerned that as work gets more fragmented, maybe workers become more replaceable. Mm. Their rights and power could weaken.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern raised. We're also seeing things like the rise of digital nomads, which the analysis notes can have, you know, mixed impacts on local communities and economies.
Okay. And then there's the whole privacy and surveillance angle with all this workplace tech.
Yeah, the potential for misuse of data by employers or even governments, it's a serious issue we need to grapple with.
Indeed. Okay, let's talk about something that defines who's even in the Democratic Club. The limits of democratic representation.
Right. This is all about who gets to be politically represented, who holds rights within the system.
The analysis contrasts restricted democracy, maybe excluding pensioners or certain gender identities, mm-hmm. with inclusive democracy, mm-hmm. which is about expanding rights to groups like children or migrants.
Broadening the circle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it introduces this really mind-bending idea, more than human democracy.
Right, giving rights to nature, yep. rivers, forests, or even AI.
Yeah, it really pushes us to think about the boundaries. Who or what has legitimate interests that demography should consider? It's quite profound.
Definitely food for thought. Now, trust and accountability, pretty crucial for democracy, right?
Absolutely essential. The analysis hammers home that public trust in the processes and the institutions directly shapes support for democracy itself. If people lose faith.
Support drops. Makes yeah. sense. And it mentions dissatisfaction with how democracy actually shapes daily life. Like planning decisions can really chip away at that trust.
It can, but interestingly, the analysis also suggests that a crisis of trust can sometimes spark innovation.
Well, it can be the push needed to find new ways to engage people, make government more responsive. Sometimes challenge leads to positive change.
That's an interesting, maybe optimistic take. Okay, what about neolibertarianism and the role of nation states? Sounds like a big shift.
It potentially is. The analysis describes neolibertarianism as focusing heavily on individual liberty, minimal government, and notes its growing influence.
And this is leading to a sort of fragmentation of governance, where traditional states exist alongside more decentralized, maybe private models.
That's the idea, more individual choice in governance. But the analysis also warns this could mean less collective decision-making, maybe worse inequality.
And tech plays a role here. Cryptocurrencies undermining state financial control.
Potentially, yeah. Promoting financial autonomy outside traditional systems. Mm-hmm. And we're even seeing experiments like seasteading or network states being talked about.
Offering alternatives, but also challenging democratic norms.
Exactly. And of course, with all the tech involved in these models, there are big questions about privacy and surveillance. Big ones.
Always seems to come back to that with new tech. Okay, media ecologies. How we communicate, trust info, make decisions.
Crucial stuff. And a major concern highlighted is disinformation eroding trust. Trust in media, trust in institutions. When you can't agree on basic facts, how do you even have a democratic debate?
Right. And then filter bubbles, echo chambers.
Yeah, they limit exposure to different views, yeah. weaken dialogue, amplify bias, reduce empathy. It just fuels polarization.
It feels like a dangerous cycle. And the analysis warns elections become vulnerable to propaganda. Marginalized voices get silenced.
The ultimate worry is an epistemic crisis. If we lose that shared basis of facts, rational discussion just breaks down. It's like trying to navigate without a map or with maps that contradict each other.
And people might just disengage altogether.
That's a real risk highlighted, yeah. Yeah. Civic disengagement because it all feels too messy or untrustworthy.
This ties into the next point, doesn't it? Artificial intelligence systems and synthetic identities.
Absolutely. AI is fundamentally changing how information is created, how we act on it.
And the analysis suggests we might see more demand for, like, digital agents to help us participate in democracy.
Possibly, but that raises huge questions, right? Who controls these agents? How much power do they have? How is democratic agency distributed if AI is mediating our participation?
Yeah, big questions about decision-making power. And if we rely more on AI assessments for governance.
That really shapes the knowledge foundation of how we govern. Plus, you have the immediate issues. AI generating misinformation, micro-targeting in politics, surveillance potential.
But also maybe enhancing citizen engagement in some ways.
Potentially, yes. It's that double-edged sword again. Huge potential, huge challenges for policy and regulation.
Okay, let's shift perspective slightly with material participation. This isn't just talking and voting.
No, it's broadening the idea of participation to include how we use everyday objects, technologies.
How does that work?
Well, think about the tools we use. How easy or affordable are they? That affects who can participate, right? Expensive tech might exclude younger people or poorer communities.
Okay, yeah.
But the analysis gives a great example, a cheap pollution sensor. Suddenly, an invisible problem like water quality becomes visible. People can collect their own data, sparking activism, holding polluters accountable.
Ah, so tech can make hidden things visible, shift power dynamics?
Exactly. It allows people to gather evidence, challenge narratives, but it also makes us ask, who designs these tools? Who gets to use them? It really matters.
That leads nicely into technopolitical infrastructures, the actual hardware and software shaping democracy.
Precisely, the underlying systems. The analysis even mentions potential future forms like the networked state or liquid democracy.
Liquid democracy.
Yeah.
That's the one where you can vote directly or delegate your vote on specific issues to someone you trust.
That's the core idea, yeah. Very fluid. These concepts really stretch how we think about democratic organization in a digital age.
Okay. Fundamental human rights. Can't talk democracy without talking about these.
Absolutely core. The analysis stresses that establishing, protecting, enforcing these rights, they're the bedrock, ensuring dignity, freedom, equality, rule of law, social cohesion.
But it's not always straightforward, is it? The analysis points to ongoing political fights over whose rights get guaranteed.
Definitely. Different groups might argue for exceptions, limitations. Think about asylum rights, sexual rights, labor rights, privacy. These are often contested areas.
And technology can outpace the law again, undermining rights before protections are in place.
That's a major challenge highlighted, yes.
Which brings us to another boundary-pushing idea, legal rights for non-human entities, giving rights to rivers, forests.
Yeah, it's an evolving concept, recognizing natural systems have a right to exist, to be healthy, to maintain biodiversity.
So you could represent a river in court.
That's the idea behind granting legal personhood, yes. Environmental groups are using public interest litigation to do just that, acting on behalf of nature.
And successful cases could set precedents.
Exactly. Encourage more recognition. And linking the rights of nature to human rights, emphasizing how environmental health and human well-being are connected, can help build broader support.
Okay, one last major area. Exploitative supply chains.
Right. Think fast fashion, some agriculture, resource extraction. The analysis points out how these systems often involve labor exploitation, environmental harm, and perpetuate inequality.
And they undermine democratic governance. How?
Well, they're often driven by powerful corporations, operating where regulations are weak. When profit is prioritized over human rights and the environment, it erodes democratic values like justice and fairness.
And it marginalizes communities, especially in the global South, weakens their civic agency.
Precisely. Lax regulations benefit the corporations, but fuel inequality and exploitation.
So the alternative is more local, ethical, transparent supply chains. Those would actually support democratic participation.
That's the argument. Giving communities more control, fostering equity. The warning is clear. If these exploitative systems aren't challenged, they consolidate corporate power and diminish trust in democratic institutions to protect people and the planet.
Wow. Okay. That is a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, really underscores how interconnected everything is when we talk about democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from whether an older person can use a health app, all the way to global supply chains and giving rights to rivers. It's all part of the picture.
It really is. Countless forces constantly shaping and reshaping our democratic systems, subtly and, well, not so subtly sometimes.
And like we said at the start, just understanding these complex links without necessarily taking a side, that feels essential for navigating, well, everything facing democracy now.
Couldn't agree more.
We hope that podcast was helpful and even instructional in outlining some of the complex relationships that our social conditions set when we think about the future of democracy. Next, we're going to go and talk in groups about which of these factors resonate with you and your experience of democracy, and think about how these factors and others can shape the types of future democracies that we really want to see and are really ready to work towards. See you in the next phase. Bye.